You strip the skin off of an animal. You can't possibly put that skin back on that animal again. It's a complete removal. But in the King James Version, these words, put on and put off, remind you of putting on perhaps a piece of clothing and taking it off again. But that's not the apostle's thought. His thought was that this old nature was stripped off completely. Now, what did Paul have in mind? Just what did he mean concerning this old man to be stripped of its habits? And who was he speaking of when he spoke of this new man? Well, evidently, Paul was thinking of Adam as the old man. And do you recall, originally, this old man was created perfect in God's image. But as a result of sin, he fell, and naturally all of his posterity came into sin. And as a result, all of us are steeped in this sin. We're slaves of it. So then, the old man in this condition couldn't possibly be recognized by God, but as we know, in his provisions, he has made a provision for Adam and his family to be reconciled to him through Christ. Now, this new man that Paul was speaking about, he has been in process for over 1,800 years. And this man that Paul was referring to is a new Adam. The scriptures tell us that it is the second Adam. The first man was of the earth, earthy, but the second man would be spiritual. Now, when you and I made a consecration to the Lord, we renounced Father Adam and everything that he stood for. Now, this is not something that we do in steps or progressively, but this thing is done at once. And in our case, those of us who have made a consecration, this already has taken place. Now, when we heard of the heavenly invitation and we responded, we stepped out of this old condition that we were in, and we stepped into a new condition. And this is one of the greatest changes that could take place in a human being. This change from earthly things to spiritual things causes a great repercussion. And it, in our lives, it causes sort of an explosion. And the change is so tremendous that it not only affects us personally, but it affects everyone that we're associated with. When you and I made a consecration and began to understand what God's plan was, that affected our neighbor, it affected the associates at work, everyone that we're associated with, there was this reaction. It's just like you would take a pebble and throw it into the water, and there the ripples begin to move in every direction. And so our consecration did just that. We were as that pebble dropped in, and these waves began to affect the whole area with which we were surrounded. And then to add to this unnatural change, because certainly it isn't a natural change for human to become spiritual, God didn't give us a new body to accompany this mind. But he says you're going to operate with this new mind in this old body. And as a result, we become dual personalities. That is, we have the mind of one nature and the body of another. This being the case, you can readily see that there would be a constant conflict, the human against the spirit. Now, when the Christian made his covenant with the Lord, he came face to face with what we will call habit interference. But perhaps you're wondering, well, just what do you mean by this statement, habit interference? Well, we would define this habit interference this way, that when you are required to learn the reverse of what you had previously learned. Now, let's take an example. Supposing this blackboard was a cabinet, and this cabinet would be subdivided into various pigeonholes. And I would take each hole and identify it either with a number or some designation. Then I would give you a group of cards, and on these cards, each particular number or designation would correspond to some particular pigeonhole in the cabinet. And then I would say, now here are these cards. Now there are just enough cards with the right designations to take care of this complete cabinet. Then I'd say, now you go to work, and let's see, in a week's time, I'll be back. I want to see how you're progressing. Now, I think if you'd practice 15, 20 minutes a day, the next day you'd be better. And I think at the end of the week, you'd be pretty good. You would know that perhaps A is here, or maybe the Q goes here, because you'd be slowly developing a habit. And I think after a while, like we mentioned, your speed and accuracy would increase. But now, supposing I would rearrange the complete pattern of our cabinet. Instead of the A being here, I would place it perhaps here. The Q that was once here, I would place it here. Then I would say to you, here's the same group of cards. Now I want you to put these cards in their respective places. What would you have? You would have habit interference. Why? Because you've learned a set of patterns previously, and you're inclined to think that A was in this corner, so you'd have to erase completely this pattern and try to learn a new pattern. In fact, it would be harder for you to learn the second pattern than someone who would come in fresh and learn that second pattern. And I think that this would illustrate something in line with our consecration. The Lord has given us a new set of patterns. The old man was used to putting certain things in certain places. He developed certain patterns of life. And now the Lord takes and rearranges his whole life. And he says, now you've got to go in a different direction. And so now he has to unlearn everything that he learned previously and now learn a new set of patterns. Now, before we go any further, we'd like to define what habit really is. I think habit is a term that's applied to any way of acting, thinking, or behaving which has become so natural with us through repetition that we can perform it unconsciously. For example, I tied my shoelace this morning. Now, I didn't have to go through a mental process of trying to memorize and see just which way this bow should go. It's automatic. I've developed a habit, and I can talk and converse with someone without any difficulty and get a perfect bow each time because I've developed a habit. Now, habit has a great deal to do with human experience. In fact, man is a habit creature. God made him so. You take insects, animals, and fish, they differ. They have what we call behavior patterns. And from the moment of birth, they're able to adjust themselves quickly to the environment in which they live. Birds, for example, they don't have to learn how to fly. Oh, they may be weak for a while, but as they gain strength, they know that the wings must flap a certain way and they can make their turns and so on without any learning. But that's not true with a human infant. So man lives by habit rather than by instinct, which animals live by. But now, have you ever considered what power a habit has? Either for good or for evil. Let's examine this just a little closely. Now, if I would take this piece of paper and I would crease it just almost any place, now you'll notice that it gave me a little resistance. It didn't just fall in place, but I had to get these sides up and give it a crease. But once that crease is in there, you try and get it out. It's almost impossible. And the next time you begin to fold it, it begins to fold exactly in the place that you creased it previously. Now, paper is plastic, and it'll give us some resistance, as you notice, but if the power is great enough, it'll overcome that resistance. But once it's changed, why, then it has a tendency just to stay the way I've made the change. Now, the human brain is also plastic, so to speak. It's not easy for the human brain to receive new impressions because the brain cells that make up our brain resist a rearranging. All of us know how hard it is sometimes to think along the lines of truth. And the claim is made that every time we think, that there's an actual rearranging of the brain cells in our brain. Now, where does habit originate? Well, you may say it originates in the mind. But someone will say, well, now, what is the mind? If you would give us a definition of the mind, just what is the mind? Well, it's the will of the person. But as you analyze that, that can't be true because it's the will of a person that controls his mind. Well, then we would say, well, then the mind could be the brain. And again, we answer no. Our brains are like tablets, so to speak, upon which impressions are made. It's that part of our human organism which the mind directly employs. The mind, therefore, is the sum of those impressions which have been made on the brain under the direction of the will by the influences with which we come in contact. Now, this perhaps seems a little complicated, and for that reason, we constructed this chart for you to see how it works. Now, all of us as Christians and as regular people are always just constantly surrounded by influences. The minute you walk on the street, there are various influences that are about us. Some of these influences are good. Some, on the other hand, are not so good. They're evil influences. These influences begin to exert themselves on the will of the person. In our particular case, the Lord has given us a new will. Those of the world still retain this old will. Then this will begins to operate on the mind of the person, causing impressions upon his brain, which result in the way he speaks, the way he acts, and the habits he develops. But now, what is the mind of a new creature? Well, we could illustrate it this way. The brain could be represented by a canvas. This brain could be represented by a canvas. And the will could be represented by an artist. Now, you know very well that a painting by an artist, if it's worth anything, has taken the artist much time. He had to be very careful to get the right dimensions, that is, proportions, the right coloring, so that when he was through, you would be able to appreciate his work. And he'd convey to your mind just what he had in mind. And so we may say sometimes that there's John Smith. Now, he has an admirable mind. Well, we don't mean when we say that someone took an x-ray of his brain and noticed that his brain cells were arranged in a beautiful manner. We don't mean that. But what we do mean is that the sum total of the impressions that were made manifest itself in some way by what he says, the way he acts, and the habits he has. Because these are reflected because of the influences that he comes in contact with. What then is the difference between the mind of the new creature and that of a natural man? Well, the difference is not in the method of formation of the impressions on that mind, but rather the kind of impressions made on the brain. Now, in the new creature, under the direction of the new will, these impressions are made by higher influences, influences that emanate from God. The Lord, when we made our consecration, we could liken this will to a filter. God has given us a new filter that we slide into place when various influences are exerted. Now, this is a special kind of filter. This filter has very minute holes, and it is so constructed that it only allows good influences to come through. It will not allow evil things to come through. Whereas this old kind of filter that we used to have, those holes are quite large, and almost anything will go through that old filter. But not this one that the Lord has given us. This is a special kind of filter. And it filters out, has the ability to filter out these evil influences that are attempting to gain control of our mind. Now, Paul gives us a pattern for our thinking. You remember in Philippians 4:8, and there he tells us exactly what influences we should be exposed to, the things we should think about, things that are pure, things that are good, things that are lovely, things that are honest. There he gives us a pattern for our thinking. And it was also Paul, you remember, who said that the things that he should do, he didn't do. And the things he should not, he did. And naturally, that would indicate to us this warfare between the spirit and the human. Recently, a brother told me of an experience where the old man just came right up to the surface. Now, before this brother came into the truth, he loved sports. And for some reason, boxing appealed to him. He seemed to like to see the human anatomy just being completely abused. Well, anyway, prize fights were his specialty. And whenever he had time to view a particular fight, especially that came over the video screen, there he was, interested in that particular sport. Well, after he made a consecration, he was relating this story to me. After making a consecration, he realized that now his time would have to be utilized far better than it was before. Now the Lord was to be taken into account. The channels would have to be more profitable. And so he was making progress, very fine. But one day as he was going to work, he was passing a newsstand, and there was a sort of a sub-headline in this newspaper, and it stated, "Tonight, championship fight." All right, there was an influence. There was an influence that he was exposed to. Now he was in control of both of these filters. Now, which of these filters was he going to put in place? Was he going to permit that influence to come through or not? Well, you know how it is with the old man? The power of suggestion began to operate. And it began to reason this way. Now, you didn't look for fights for 2 years, didn't you? Right? Now, this is a championship fight. Yes? Now, what's just one fight going to hurt? Now, it wouldn't take too much time. In about an hour, it'll be all over. Certainly, it couldn't be anything wrong with that. It's not going to hurt you. You made a good record. Well, as he began to think, and the longer he thought, the stronger this power of suggestion became, and finally he succumbed. So the time came that evening for this particular prize fight, and he sat down in his chair and tuned in his receiver, and there he heard the noise of the crowd. And then in about 2 minutes, the television set just went out. Blank. It went black. But did you know, he didn't realize that he was in error looking at something of that nature. But again, the old man, so subtle, began to suggest again. And this time it suggested to him, now look, this TV repairman was here just a while ago. He didn't fix that set correctly. You go to that telephone, you call him up and tell him what has happened. Well, it so happened, he related, that the man was busy. He never came out. But this brother began to think. And as he thought, he began to realize what was actually happening. What he really did was took this old filter and just put it into place and permitted that influence to make an impression on his mind, which resulted in an action which wasn't very pleasing to the Lord. Now, temptations will always be with us, but it's our job to put a barrier in front of that temptation. Now, as he was passing that newsstand, he could have probably glanced at it, but if he kept on walking, but no, as he began perhaps standing there a little too long, and as he walked, this thing began working, but if he immediately just shut this off and just took the filter that the Lord gave him and put that into place, that would have stopped that influence immediately, and he would be out of danger. So what he did was use the wrong filter. But now you may ask the question, can the new creature have bad habits? Now the Bible says that we're prone to sin, and if you're not developing good habits, you're going to develop something that wouldn't be very pleasing to the Lord. And so we should, as much as possible, try to reduce the majority of our daily duties to habit. But you may say, well, if you would do that, those that do things by habit can't do anything original, but they're like a machine. But to become efficient in any line depends on the presence of well-established habits. Now, the task which is done largely or wholly by habit is done automatically, it's true, but it leaves your mind free for employment elsewhere. For example, the first time a railroad engineer takes his train on a new road. Now, that particular engineer is under a tremendous strain. He doesn't know where the next curve is. He doesn't know where the stop is. He doesn't know how fast to go along this straightaway. And so at the end of that run, he's just exhausted. But as he continues that run day after day, and in a year's time, he's just as efficient and relaxed with controls. And even though he's responsible for 300 people, yet he's relaxed. Why? Because he's developed a habit. He knows when the next turn will come. He knows where the red light will be. And so he's relaxed. And so his mind then could be open for other emergencies that may arise. Now, you and I are living in a nervous age. This is what they call the aspirin age. This is the age, the ulcer era, and so on. And the disposition is to strain because of the conditions that we live under. And the minute you leave the home, you're under this strain. And sometimes we draw too much on this nervous energy of ours, and if we do, then we get into trouble. And so we should try to conserve this reserve energy by developing good habits. Now let's single out the housewives in our audience. Now you know many times the sisters complain and they say that she can't really find any time for study. And she gives us various excuses, and some are good, legitimate. The children have to go to school, the husband has to go to work, she has to clean the house, and so on and so on. And she does have a lot of work. But if you would review her complete day, right from the very beginning when she gets up to the very end of the day, and analyze that time, you would find that somewhere along there aren't habits of the right kind. And if she would rearrange her schedule and develop certain kind of habits, I think that she could squeeze out at least one full hour for herself to study. But you may say, as I've been speaking, well, what has all this to do with new creatures? Well, the answer is that it is of vital importance to the new man. Good earthly habits are going to reflect in our spiritual lives. Habits of thought should be developed. And this is of prime importance, because our habits of thought, what goes on in this mind, will depend whether you make your calling and your election sure. Let's examine this habit of thought. Do you have habits of thought? Well, perhaps you want a definition. Well, what do you mean by habits of thought? What do you mean by that? Well, by a habit of thought, I mean the normal condition to which that mind returns habitually after your daily work, or in moments of leisure, mental leisure. Good habits of thought have to be cultivated so they become strong habits. Now you take a natural man having good eating habits, you would expect him to be reasonably healthy. If he eats the right food, the right combinations, he's usually a healthy man. If he transgresses in his eating habits, he has to pay the price. And I think we could apply this to the spiritual man. And we could ask ourselves the question, what are your spiritual eating habits? Are we eating the food that the Lord has provided? Or do we like tasty food, which would not give us any nourishment? Are we regular at the spiritual meeting places, eating places? Now in Chicago, being a large class, there are 10 spiritual restaurants that are open all week. But there's something about study meetings I think we should consider very seriously, and that as we attend these study meetings, there you have an opportunity to chew the food. Right now, you're not chewing much. I'm doing most of the work. You're just listening. But supposing this was a study meeting, and I said, Sister so-and-so, would you answer this question? Then you'd have to use your spiritual teeth to think and to digest that a little bit. Well, Russell once said that the easiest meeting to attend is a meeting of this type. But a study meeting, there the mind begins to be exercised. And in order to get the most benefit out of study meetings, you must go regularly. It's just like your meals. You must have regular meals. And so you must be regular at the meetings to get the most benefit from them. So regularity is important. So a fine spiritual habit would be regularity at the meetings. Then your habits of fellowship in the ecclesia. Who governs your fellowship in the ecclesia? Is it the new will or is it the old will? You know, there's a tendency in the flesh to fellowship with those that personality-wise we fit together. There's that tendency. It's a human tendency. There's Brother So-and-so. I like just the way he conducts himself, and there's sort of an attraction, and so we're attracted to him or her. And as a result, I think our habit of fellowship deteriorates. It is not developing as it should. There are reasons sometimes why our fellowship cannot be expanded individually. If we have the right basis for a fellowship, sometimes that is lacking. Therefore, we can't fellowship. Now, the Scriptures outline for us a pattern for us to follow. And we're to follow that. Then there are some brethren that are rather backward. They're timid. And they'll sit in the corner someplace and not say much. They don't seem to get into the spirit of fellowship and so on. And this is where the new will should get a hold of things and be firm. Now, in the ecclesia, there are certain habits that members often compliment, or, on the other hand, they may show displeasure. For example, the business meeting. Now, the business meetings usually are arranged for by the elders, but oftentimes we find that somebody in the membership is annoyed, especially when you have quite a large class. There's certain business to be transacted. I think here in Buffalo you also must have certain kinds of business that the ecclesia must vote upon. Well, now let's briefly consider this subject of business meeting. Now, the business meeting of the ecclesia conducts one of the most, not one, but the most important business in the world, because it's the Lord's business, and it doesn't make any difference what institution it is. This is the most important business in the world, the Lord's business. And the Lord has entrusted us to conduct His business in this place. Buffalo is responsible for this area. Detroit is responsible for their area. Chicago, so on, and all other places, and so on. Now, the ecclesia and the members are to make the decisions based on how they see the Lord's will. Now, this is something only peculiar to us as truth people. There are no other Christian people who have this particular privilege. You take any church in the world, and there's always somebody in the head dictating as to what should be done, declaring the policies, establishing the rules and regulations. But that isn't so with the followers of Christ. That isn't so with the ecclesia. The Lord appoints them as supreme. And they're responsible. And it's the ecclesia that dictates to its servants what it wishes them to do. The servants never dictate to the class. Now, the business meeting of the church is a completely different meeting. You take a study meeting, that has its peculiarities. You have a testimony meeting, that's peculiar. You have a sermon such as you have now, that's peculiar. But the business meeting seems to stand aside all by itself. And I think the Lord especially made it so. There are certain characteristics that you cannot develop any other way except that you have a business meeting. That applies collectively as well as individually. I've known brethren, wonderful at study meetings, wonderful in giving talks, and then for some strange reason, when a business meeting comes upon the floor, the brother just goes to pieces. What he says and the things he does, you wonder if that's the same one. But the Lord has arranged this particular meeting for development of that kind. After all, the Lord said we're being trained as judges for the next age. And so the Lord says, all right, here I'm going to give you a small job. Here's a decision. I want you, and you to make this decision. And so the matter comes up. And many times it's quite a responsibility. You're responsible to the Lord, then you think, now, Lord, what is the best thing to do? Well, the Lord has given you a spirit of a sound mind. He's given you His Spirit. He's given you all the implements. Make the decision. So I think business meetings should never be shunned, because the Lord has put them for a reason, and they are doing their development work. Now, there are many natural habits that we must transform. You know, when we come into the truth, we bring with us a big bag of habits that we've developed. And many times there are certain things that we could use, we could salvage from that bag. Sometimes we just have to throw the whole thing away, it doesn't fit. Sometimes you come in with a natural habit of disobedience, self-centered. The Lord doesn't use that. He can't use that. You've got to just throw that away and develop a new habit of obedience. Then you may have a tendency to become discouraged. Well, that's something that the Lord can't use. If we're too slow sometimes, then you've got to develop something that's a little faster, more speed. If we have the habit of gratifying our earthly senses, that too has to be changed. This calls to mind the Apostle Paul's admonition. You remember when he said that we should set our affection on things above. Now, these affections that we're setting up there above aren't going to go up there like a balloon. They're not going to float up there. But it's going to take hard work. And it's going to mean the using of that new will, that new kind of filter that the Lord has given us. And it's going to be hard work. They've got to be hoisted up there, and it's going to be laborious work. We put them up there, and before you turn around, down they come again. And so we've got to keep putting them up. And as we continue that process, we'll become spiritually minded. Now, perhaps you're wondering what this blackboard is doing here. But if you've forgotten everything else I've said, this, in a capsule form, will be the discourse of the afternoon. And we term it the formula of destiny. If you would sow a thought, you're going to reap an action. You take the act and you sow that. You're going to reap a habit. Then you take the habit and you sow that. You're going to reap a character. Then that character that you develop, if you sow that, you're going to reap. The Lord add His blessing.
Thank you, Brother Ed. I'm sure Brother Ed has brought us many words on how to develop the habits of thought, word, and deed. Now, before we close this portion, dear friends, we have again a change in our program. We had a baptismal service planned, but we have no candidates. So we're going to substitute. Brother Penrose will serve us with a lecture of his own choosing. And we're going to cut the intermission, which we had there of a half hour, to 15 minutes so that our next service will start at 3:45. And we'll use hymn 136. Hymn 136 to close, rising on the last verse and asking Brother Jesuit to dismiss us.
You are so
Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Again we draw nigh unto thee, thankful for this privilege that we've had of meeting with thy people, sitting at the feet of Jesus and learning of him. We thank thee that thou hast provided us with this spirit of a sound mind, that thou hast given us thy Holy Spirit, and thou hast given us this new filter, this new will. Help us that we may use this new filter that thou hast given us. Help us to develop a character that thou could use in the coming kingdom. Continue to guide and direct us. Continue to be with us the rest of this day. We ask it in his name. Amen.
Christmas Day, when winter days grow cold. With the time it passes by, we put away the train. Then we live and wonder why we can't remember him. The Christmas star shines once again, and then it fades away. It's Christmas every day. It's not the bells and it's not the snow, and it's not the gifts we get, but he was born so long ago. It's easy to forget. Peace on earth, goodwill to men. But men can't go alone. We get lost along the way, but he can bring us home. Remember him throughout the year. Without the star above, he left us all a Christmas gift. He left the gift of love. And it's Christmas every day.